From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with stories of high strangeness, followed by conversations with Linda. But here's what's happening. The minute hand on the doomsday clock ticked closer to midnight. That's not good, as the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists said it's seen an increase in dangers to humanity. From climate change to what they call warfare, the group took the unprecedented step of moving the clock 30 seconds closer to midnight to leave it at 2.5 minutes away from disaster. And even after someone is declared dead, life apparently continues in the body, suggesting a surprising new study with important implications. Gene expression, when information stored in DNA is converted into instructions for still making proteins, which tracked postmortem activity. In fact, they say some cells seem to fight to live after the body has died. That's kind of weird. You know, it's my theory that when you die, your brain is still alive. So when they bury you, you're still fully aware of things that are going on. That would be awful. President Trump's plan to make Mexico pay for the wall that he intends to build on the southern border may have taken shape when a spokesperson suggested imposing a 20% import tax on Mexican goods. And Mexico is not too happy about this entire situation. Jerome Corsi writes for WND. He's with us. Jerry, a lot of executive orders going out of the White House these days.
A flurry of executive orders, I'd say. It's been fast and furious. I mean, the wall is only one of the several important executive orders. Really, they're executive memoranda, which are different, that President Trump has signed. I think another significant one is pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and also the memorandum basically providing for the Keystone Pipeline and another pipeline to be built. And these were very contentious issues that President Obama fought hard to get in place.
Well, you know what? Is Congress, even though the Republicans, most of them, is Congress upset that he's doing so many executive orders and bypassing Congress?
I don't think so at this point, George, because, you know, the problem is that the presidency has gained momentum with executive orders and other rules. I mean, I was studying today the rules passed in 2016. A record was set by Barack Obama where the agencies issued 3,853 rules and regulations, all without Congress. These are just rules issued by department of this, department of that. And they took an astounding 97,000 pages in the Federal Register to print, which is 15,000 pages higher than the prior record. So, you know, President Obama was very active in executive orders, executive memorandum, a whole series of what they call dark regulatory actions, which include guidance, interpretive rules, statements of policies that the agencies just regularly issue every day without Congress being involved. So I think there's going to be, you know, the problem with Barack Obama's presidency was, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And so the Barack Obama administration had so many executive orders, so many rules and regulations that much can be dismantled by the same executive orders, memorandum that President Trump will issue, and rules and regulations the departments can issue to reverse Barack Obama policies.
Quickly, too, how much will the wall cost, Jerry? Do we know?
Probably $14 billion. That's the most recent estimate I've seen. And you can probably double that by the time it gets finished.
Well, now that you're going to be the White House correspondent for WND.com, see if you can get the president to foot a couple billion dollars and insulate our power grid from an EMP attack or a solar flare.
And also cyber attack.
That's right.
These are major threats which have been under-analyzed, underestimated, and we've taken lead in reporting on the EMP attacks, just as you have, George.
Yes.
You've run shows on it. It's a very serious issue of, you know, a nuclear weapon exploded in the atmosphere that could put down the entire electric grid or major portions of it across the United States.
Yep. Let's get it done. You think we can?
We're going to push for it, George, and I'll be doing everything I can as correspondent in the White House to do my part.
Okay, thanks a lot. Jerry Corsi writes for WND.com. Well, here we go again. Talk of another flu, the spread of bird flu, and the number of viral strains currently circulating and causing infections have now reached unprecedented levels, raising the risk of a potential human outbreak, according to disease experts. They have said this before, so let's see what happens. An amazing story where NASA apparently cuts a live feed from an international space station after mysterious objects appear on camera. A self-styled alien hunter believes that he spotted a UFO during the live feed from the ISS. His name is John Credick. He's from the United Kingdom. He claims he has never seen anything like it before. It's an amazing story. And, of course, what else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Yeah, I've seen those videos from NASA, and they're rather interesting.
They are.
Them floating around, and I don't have any explanation for them. It makes me think that our new president should be addressing the possibility of building a fence against aliens if the reports from this week are any indicator. Boy, it's been a really interesting week, George, and if any of our listeners haven't been to the website to read any of the reports, this might be a good week for them to take their first foray to our website, ufocenter.com, and read some of the reports. There were so many really good ones, I didn't know where to begin, but I'm going to reach back 50 years, going back again to older reports. A gentleman who in 1967 was 12 years of age writes that he was driving home with his mother from a trip to the local store to pick up some milk. As they were driving along their long driveway going back to their house, they were quite alarmed to see a large object settle down in the woods on their property, very brightly lighted, very bizarre. He estimates as big as their home. They got home, they apprised all the other occupants, members of their family, about the incident, and of course all of them did what red-blooded American males will do, ran to the closet to get a blunderbuss to defend them from miscreants and boarders. It's a very interesting report of what happened. The next morning, they were out in that area of the property where the light had been seen to touch down. They found one of their several horses dead with all the signs that we associate today with mutilation cases. Very interesting report. It's I mention it, too, because it's reminiscent of the Snippy abduction in Alamosa, Colorado, back about the same time, either August or probably September of 1967, that Linda Howe is investigated. Also, Larry and Marilyn Childs, former state directors for MUFON in Washington, were some of the first on the scene of that horse. Very interesting case, and I recommend people take a minute or two to read it. It's a good one. Another case from 40 years ago, Fort Worth, Texas. A young gentleman, well, an adult male today, reports that he and his 11-year-old friend were out camped in his friend's backyard. His friend fell asleep immediately, but the gentleman who wrote the report heard some rustling outside the tent. And what he saw peeking its head through that tent is reminiscent of the movie E.T. Very interesting case. And tonight, Sumter, or rather Georgetown, South Carolina, a cluster of yet another cluster of these orange lights over Georgetown, South Carolina. There are more reports to be read. They should be posted by tomorrow morning.
You got it. Peter, thank you so much. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, through the eyes of an astrologer, what's happening to this planet? Next, Kenneth Bowser joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. This hour, Kenneth Bowser joins us. He has studied both astrology and ancient history for more than 40 years. He began his astrological studies as a tropicalist, but soon switched to the sidereal side of the camp. He'll explain what that means. Ken was a personal service astrologer, longtime columnist for the American Astrology Magazine. He created the first comprehensive course on Western sidereal astrology and published a book, of course, on predictive techniques. Ken was among the few Western astrologers to predict Donald Trump's victory. He did that back in May. Kenneth, welcome to the show. It's going to be good to chat with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
What is a sidereal astrologist, by the way?
Someone who reckons positions of bodies from the stars themselves instead of the northern hemisphere vernal equinox. It's the original system of astrology developed by the Babylonians.
The other type is called topical, right?
Exactly, and positions of planets and stars are counted from the vernal equinox and the solstices in that system.
Is one more accurate than the other?
That's my reason for going to sidereal, because tropical doesn't take into account one of the Earth's motions called precession, which is absolutely essential. You get out of sync over long periods of time with the sky if you don't take into account precession, which is the wobble of the Earth's spin axis. Sidereal does take that into account, and tropical does not.
You have looked at all kinds of things that are going on. Earth changes. You predicted Donald Trump back in May. We'll talk about that. Possibilities of all kinds of things that could happen. Is 2017 overall, Kenneth, going to be a pretty good year for everybody?
I don't think so. And
oh, boy.
I don't like to fall into the doomsayer camp, but I think it'll be a disastrous year.
Oh, my God. Really?
Specifically, I think that the New York Stock Exchange is just a couple weeks away from getting hit very, very hard.
A couple weeks away. Okay.
Yeah, so you don't have long to wait to see if I know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody wants to know if you're right or wrong soon, don't they?
Exactly. So I would say now is the time to sell.
Okay, so 20,000 right now, all-time high. What are you seeing astrologically to make you say that there's going to be a big bump down here?
Well, the conditions that obtained in 1929 and the Panic of 1837, a number of the other really, really severe financial crises in this country, the Knickerbocker crisis in 1907, the 1973 Arab oil embargo, all of that stuff, especially the 1929 situation, repeats very soon. The main components are that transiting Pluto, a revolutionary contact or planet, it makes a square just a short while, an exact square with the U.S., the United States, natal Saturn, which very consistently has been really, really troublesome. And transiting Saturn will oppose the position of Mars in the U.S. horoscope in about a week.
So that soon?
Yes, and the situation in February, I think, is only the beginning of what will be worse in the summer when Saturn gets involved with Neptune in a relationship called a mundane square that's exact within a degree for 3 months. And that's exactly what happened in 1929 when the market was most seriously affected. That is on the very worst days in October. Saturn was exactly mundane square Neptune.
Now, what will Wall Street say, Kenneth, when this happens? Because surely they're not going to say, astrologically speaking, the stock market dropped. So what will they say in terms of financially were the causes for this?
Very hard to say. The market is extremely fickle. It's risen 10% since the election on nothing. On
hopes?
Yes, but nothing substantial.
Right.
And I think that it's fair to say that some of the natural disasters, particularly in this country, will have some significant effect on what happens later in the year. I'm thinking that the most outstanding and horrific part of the year in terms of really serious trouble is likely to develop in the Los Angeles Basin, where you are in March, especially early March.
I'll be here.
Third. I think there's very likely to be an earthquake in the Los Angeles Basin, and perhaps more than one. That is a series of aftershocks that might even continue into April.
Can you predict the Richter size on that?
Oh, boy, it's really hard to go into numbers. All I can say is that it's big. Anything with regard to numbers is just a guess. I would say that it's likely to be at least as big as Northridge and probably bigger. And that was January 1994. It brought down freeways.
Wow, just what we need, Ken.
It's definitely not what you need. And I think it'll be the worst earthquake to hit the lower 48 in several decades.
Well, now back to the stock market, because a couple things. One, if you're right, you become an expert on this program. We call you a lot after that happens, believe me. But when you say weeks, are we talking about 2, 6,
yes.
12? How soon?
2 to 3 at the most.
2 to 3 weeks.
As little as 10 days.
All right. In as little as 10 days, you think, from today, you think there's going to be a major hit. Now, when you say major hit in the stock market, what are we talking about there?
I understand that I don't think that it will necessarily fall by hundreds and hundreds of points immediately. For example, in 1929, the slide started in September 1929. The real damage was in October, but the market lost 10% of its value in September. Even before mm-hmm. it was losing 11, 12, and 13% per day during the worst days of October. So I think it's the beginning of some pretty serious losses that won't be made up quickly, as has been the case since 2009. Every single time the market has been hit hard, it's recovered in short order since the market turned around in March of 2009. I think that comes to an end now, and that 2017 is mostly a wash, and that it's bad enough to take out most of 2018.
Wow. And a 10% drop now would be 2,000 points. That's pretty significant.
Exactly.
All right, back to these earth changes. There is a 2-mile-long split in the Arizona desert that they have discovered that is really strange. Could that have something to do with what is impending? I mean, Arizona, it's west. It's not on the coast, of course, but it's out there.
I think that's too far away from the area that really seems to be lit up from a symbolic point of view. I think if you went as far as Palm Springs, that far east of L.A., that you would be on the ragged edge of what would be affected by what I think is going to happen in March. It's perhaps more likely not to be east of San Bernardino.
A lot of people, meteorologists and geologists, and a lot of people have been talking about a big earthquake on the West Coast. A big one, and so you're just you're adding more credence to that possibility.
Well, I've been looking at this for a long, long time, since the Tang Shan earthquake in 1976 that was so devastating. That's what got me started looking at this stuff, and so I very carefully examined all the really big ones to look for what was common and between them and how to time them. And after doing that for more than 40 years now, I'm coming out with what I think is a called shot. And, you know, I don't do that lightly, because it would be very, very awkward to be wrong. But the symbolism in support of something in the first week of March is very, very compelling. And I'm a little jiggled about it, because if it's bigger than Northridge, you know, it's a...
Oh, that's huge then.
Exactly. It's a logarithmic scale. So anything even slightly bigger on the Richter scale is massively more powerful.
Kenneth, hold on. We're coming back right after the break as we talk more about your work and introduction to Western sidereal astrology. Well, next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us as we talk about searches going on for planets and what's happening with extinctions of giraffes. Yeah, believe it. And then signals that could be from ET. All that and more with Linda Moulton Howe next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Kenneth Bowser was with us as we're talking about astrology and some events. When you predicted Trump in May of last year, what did you see? What did you look at, Kenneth?
Well, he had a really good solar return. But it's important to distinguish between a tropical and a sidereal solar return. The sidereal solar return is different from a solar return by the difference in the length of the sidereal year versus a solar year. The difference is 20 minutes and 24 seconds. So that after age 3, the difference between a tropical and a sidereal solar return is an hour. And by age 70, Trump's age when he won last November, the difference between a tropical and a sidereal solar return is almost an entire day. And the tropical solar return was pretty unremarkable. The sidereal solar return was extremely good, and Hillary's were just abysmal. And so in addition to the really excellent solar return that he had very, very good transits on election day. And hers, well, good, were not good enough to overcome a better solar return and better transits. It's sort of like a playing poker. It's not like when millions of people vote for you, you don't have a good hand. But he had a straight flush, and that beats a full house. It was sort of like
that. Nothing wrong with a straight flush.
Not at all.
I take that every day, believe it or not. So you saw those trends, and you picked him in May.
Well, it wasn't very difficult. That's one of the great advantages of sidereal astrology. It affords you a point of view that is like being at a higher level that allows you to look down on something from a better point of view.
Kenneth, when you wrote your book, An Introduction to Western Sidereal Astrology, what is Eastern? Is there an Eastern Sidereal Astrology as well?
Yes, that's Indian astrology.
Oh, all right. And that's different?
Yes, Western Sidereal is really based on Babylonian astrology, and the problem is that there was a lot of trade intercourse in the third millennium BC between the Tigris-Euphrates River Valley and the Indus River Valley, and each side claims to have taught the other astrology, and you know, the jury is out with respect to which side is true or if they developed it independently, simultaneously. In any case, there are differences between Indian and Babylonian astrology. They're both sidereal, but they're more like kissing cousins than brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So Western sidereal astrology is very much like tropical astrology with the sidereal zodiac substituted for the tropical zodiac.
Kenneth, let's look ahead at some other episodes over the next year. So we've got the possibility in several weeks of a downward spiral of the stock market. With all this happening in this brand new year for Donald Trump, who you predicted would get elected, and he did, then he's going to have, I would think, his hands tied.
I think so, too. He has mixed things going on now. That is, he has Jupiter very closely trine his sun. That's very, very good. At the same time, Saturn is conjoined to his moon and opposite his sun. That's really bad. And in addition, he has Saturn square the Saturn of Washington's inauguration. which is Washington's first inauguration, mm-hmm. which is really the chart for the office of the presidency. And it suggests that he isn't able to fully implement his agenda because of a great deal of opposition by circumstance. For example, he killed the TPP, and immediately farmers in Iowa are up in arms about it because their income will be hurt. And the money that could be diverted to a wall is not likely to help the deficit at all, and it's enraged the Mexicans. It's almost like, at least for the moment, his every move evokes an unfavorable response. But while Jupiter is trying his sun, he'll be able to do some things. Once that Jupiter business slides away in February, he'll be in a less favorable position than he is now.
When you get an astrological chart, and if it's not a good one, what can an individual do about that? Anything? I mean, what do they do? Put their head in the sand and hide? What can they do?
Well, everybody gets unfavorable things from time to time, and it's it has more often to do with delay and being thwarted than defeat. And so in most cases, all you can do is soldier on. And because everyone must deal with unfavorable things all the time, one steals oneself to get through it with resolve and determination, and acting like a big boy.
All right, let's take some calls here for you, too, while we still have some time. Let's go to Hacienda Heights, California. Joni's with us, first-time caller. Hi, Joni. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. Thank you. So I was just thinking, obviously, that my economy is going to be bleak for 2017 and the impending earthquake. But what about the individual signs? I'm a Virgo. Are Virgos maybe going to have a less bleak 2017?
Let's see.
Where'd you go, Kenna?
I'm just thinking in my head about what she said. I think things are likely to be a little better for her during the late summer, but it's very hard to talk about someone based merely on their sun sign.
I mean, some people will have a good year.
Of course, that's invariably true. What's your birthday?
25th, 1954.
Missed that at the top, Joni. Go ahead.
Pardon me?
Go ahead. He missed that birthday.
Oh, August 25th, 1954.
Okay.
Okay, hang on just a minute.
1954. Yeah, we're not going to be able to do personal readings, Kenneth, because it takes too much time.
The problem is that it's very difficult to answer on the spot without knowing anything about your horoscope except the sun. I think things will be better in the second half of the year.
Do you see anything major happening in the year beyond, earthquakes are big, of course, and a fallen economy is big, but do you see wars breaking out?
Yes, but I don't think they're World War II type wars, but rather regional things that don't involve the biggest players.
Now, you have another book called Primary Directions in the Horoscope of the United States. Tell me about that.
The birth time for the U.S. isn't known with surety, and so the task of determining when the U.S. was agreed to is something that astrologers have been trying to figure out for a long, long time. And I was impressed by an article in the July 1851 edition of Harper's Magazine, which was to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And in it, the author says that a little after meridian, that means a little after local apparent noon, a unanimous vote was taken in favor of declaring themselves free and independent states. And because there's another legend about a bell being rung in the Philadelphia State House, as soon as the vote was taken, which was according to tradition shortly after noon, I was impressed that the estimate panned out with a technique called primary directions for 12:16 p.m. local mean time. There was no local mean time in 1776. The local apparent time equivalent was 12:12 local apparent time. But if you do primary directions set up for 12:12 p.m. local apparent time, which is 12:16 p.m. local mean time, the primary directions work out for the significant events in the country as per the medieval technique that they were used for. That is, primary directions were used to determine when someone had to have been born in order for certain things to have happened at certain times.
Can you be asked, for example, a specific question about something that's impending, and then you come up with some explanation, like this Mexican-American wall that Donald Trump wants to build, and then he wants Mexico to pay for it directly or indirectly? If I were to say to you, what's going to happen with the wall? Does astrology
build?
You don't think it's going to be built, okay? Astrologically, no. Or is this just your gut saying?
No, that's my I said it because he has bad things ongoing, especially after February, that will make it difficult to put much into play.
Now, that will be interesting and easy to track, of course, too. What do you think your percent of hits are, Ken?
Regarding the country?
Yeah, everything that you've been doing. I mean, what do you think your percentage is of accuracy?
I would say about 70%.
That's pretty good. What about most astrologers? Where do you think they stand?
It depends on whether or not they do predictive work or not. Many just are discouraged by mistakes. It's hard to do.
Would you say
you want to be talking with someone who's got some years under their belt? It depends a lot on how old they are. The best astrologers are the older ones.
Really? Because of experience?
Yes.
Would you say that you're more of a predictor or really more of an astrologer?
Well, they go hand in hand. Most of what I do is natal interpretation, but I've ventured into what's called mundane astrology for decades.
That's a horrible name for astrology, but I've heard it before.
Yeah, it relates to talking about events versus character.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, again, you have studied, though, topical astrology as well, right?
Yeah, I started out in the 70s doing tropical, and I was distressed by some of the things I found. I just couldn't see Ronald Reagan as an Aquarian. He was so very, very conservative. And in the same way, you know, Dick Cheney didn't seem like an Aquarius to me. They're sidereal Capricorns. And so things like that pushed me toward the sidereal, especially when I met sidereal astrologers who were better than I was. And I wanted to know what they knew. And so I was impressed by their skill.
What makes one astrologer better than another, their accuracy or what?
Whether they see character well enough for a client to say unmistakably that they see themselves in what the astrologer is talking about, and if they can predict accurately, both.
And where would you rank yourself?
Oh, gosh.
I know, that's a tough question to have somebody rank themselves, for crying out loud, but
I
put you on the spot.
Well, some people say they think I'm pretty good.
We'll know in a couple weeks, won't we?
You will.
I mean, if you're wrong, let's say about the stock market, what will happen? Will it just zoom? Will it go the other way?
I think that if I'm wrong, I don't see it zooming. If I'm wrong, I think that it just won't drop very much.
It'll just hover where it is.
Exactly. And I would say that there isn't sufficient symbolism for it to zoom.
And you base this, though, strictly on astrology. This is not 100% instinct or anything.
Okay. Absolutely.
Wow. That's something. Well, when you're looking at astrological charts, I mean, have you been wowed where you go, oh, my God, look at that?
Yeah,
has
I'm
that
wowed
ever happened?
Now.
You are.
It's because the 2017 situation is so much like the really, really bad drops that have occurred over the past 200 years. If you do mundane astrology, you look at that stuff, and you want to carefully investigate the panic of 1837 and the crash of 1857, 1873, 1893, and say, well, all right, what's going on there? And am I impressed or am I left confounded? And it doesn't take a long study to see the consistencies between those things that are just mind-blowing.
So I would guess, though, Kenneth, that there have been times you have made astrological predictions and you really didn't want to, but they were there and you had to.
Well, exactly. I'm a lefty, you know, not a wild, hair-on-fire lefty, but I wasn't thrilled to see Mr. Trump win, and yet you have to leave your bias at the door. And he clearly had a winning hand. It was not a point at issue, as far as I was concerned, that he was going to beat Hillary.
Where do you get your books?
At Amazon.
And your website is? Though we have a link, let's just mention it for people.
WesternSidereal Astrology.com.
Boy, and you better spell sidereal for people.
That's SIDEREAL.
All right, great. Thank you, Kenneth. Appreciate you being on the show. So we're going to look at a declining stock market within 2 weeks, a huge earthquake in California, as some people have predicted as well. And what's interesting is you've got geologists backing you up, too. So we'll see what happens. Now, up next on Coast to Coast AM, we've got investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joining us with some incredible stories of high strangeness. And then in our last hour, we call it Conversations with Linda. We'll open up the phone lines, and you can ask her a question or two.